The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 898. It's the 16th of October 2017. On the podcast today, I have Roy Pitchford, CEO of Vast Resources, that's VAST, and Roy discusses their record quarterly production figures and gives a general update on operations at their projects in Romania and Zimbabwe. Also on the podcast, on their first day of dealings, Dr. Dan Gooding, CEO of New Formix, that's NFX, which is a reverse takeover of Leverett, by the way. Dan discusses their strategy and the use of co-crystal technology to protect and enable new commercially attractive product opportunities in the biotech world. Plus, I also have financial analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talks about Asos, Reckitt Benckiser, and Travis Perkins, who all have updates this week. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Roy Pitchford, CEO, Craig Harvey, COO, and Andrew Prelia, Executive Director in charge of Romania of Vast Resources. That's VAST. Guys, thank you very much for joining me.
Pleasure.
Now, you've got some good news out today, and we'll get to that in a bit. But before we do, Roy, for people listening right now who are new to the podcast or are not sure what Vast is all about, could you give a brief summary as to what all your operation is about, please?
Certainly, Justin. Vast Resources started its life off some 10, 11 years ago as an exploration junior focused on opportunities in Zimbabwe and Zambia. And it amassed quite an array of deposits and opportunities in Zimbabwe and Zambia. But as with a lot of junior exploration companies, the ability to parcel these up and sell them on to the majors disappeared. And so at the beginning of 2015, the decision was made to convert the company from a junior exploration company to a junior production company. And we spent 2015 realigning the company, getting rid of the exploration arm, and setting about developing our first mine in Zimbabwe, the Pixton Peerless Gold Mine, and then having a proper look at the opportunities that were presented to the company in Romania. And consequently, we have got a mine operating in Romania. We've got a mine operating in Zimbabwe. We will soon be having a second mine in Romania and a second mine in Zimbabwe. And so the transition is complete. We're a junior mining company and not a junior exploration company.
Excellent. Okay, well, you've had a quarterly production summary and an operations update RNS out, and well done on the report. Some record-breaking figures in there. First of all, can you tell us or run through the results and highlight where the improvements have been most felt, please?
I think the improvements have been felt across the board, both in terms of mining, the quantity of material and ore mined, the quality of the ore that has been mined, i.e. the grade, and finally the processing of this material through the metallurgical plants, where our recoveries have improved and our quantity of concentrate or gold produced has improved, as well as the quality of the concentrates coming out of Romania. We have a target of 18% copper concentrate and 45% zinc concentrate. We're getting very well in the copper, we've achieved it, and the zinc, we're getting very close to it. In terms of the gold in Zimbabwe, obviously we produce a bullion that goes to the state refinery for final refining. So it's across the board where there have been improvements in both the mining and the processing. Perhaps, Craig, you would like to comment on the mining.
Yes, thanks, Roy. You know, in most of the sort of westernized world, we use software programs to determine optimal pit shapes and optimal mining sequences. So these are sort of some of the objectives or some of the methods that we're using to improve the mining. It did, for instance, show up that our stripping at Maraela was behind. And to show our commitment to the operation and to Romania, we have invested in a blast hole drilling rig that can help us increase our stripping rates. And that'll be on the ground shortly. And then simple things like equipment availability and planned maintenance schedules. You know, those things go a long way to making sure that your equipment you have, you can utilize at a 92% efficiency rate. And once you've got all these things going very quickly, your mining rates improve, as is evidenced in the Q3 numbers and continuing through into the months that we are in now.
Andrew, on the processing side at Jacobin?
At the processing side, I mean, Craig's been working closely with management on the ground, improving systems. We've invested some small capex items to try and increase efficiencies. We're making constant modifications to allow us to increase the quantity and the quality of concentrate to be sold. And we've been maintaining a steady state now, and it's improving, I think, on a weekly basis to achieve our targets moving forward. We've come very close to our September targets at the September quarterlies. We continue to maintain that going through into the winter season as well.
Okay, excellent stuff. But you know, as with all things, there have been some minor hiccups along the way, such as the sulfide plant at Pixstone Peerless and the feasibility study at Finita. Could you tell me more about these developments, please, Roy?
Certainly. The sulfide plant installation at Pixton is all but complete. All the equipment's in. We are testing some of the equipment at the moment, and the design components of things such as the mill liners are not quite what we want them to be, and these are being modified at the moment and corrected. So we should get through these minor teething problems fairly quickly, and we should see the production build-up of the sulfide processing part of the plant going forward very, very soon. The oxide plant obviously is operating very well. You can see that in the 68,000 tons that were milled. Our target is 20,000 a month, so we've exceeded our objective there, and we will now be pushing the milling tonnage from the 20,000 to the 35,000 ton level per month. On the Faneita tailings facility, perhaps Craig, you would like to just come in and explain where we are with that feasibility study and what our thinking is going forward.
Yeah, sure, right. What we have is we have received our metallurgical test work back from ALS in Perth, the ALS laboratories in Perth. We're busy analysing the data. Obviously, we're now busy costing the process that has revealed itself to be the one that can probably deliver the results that we want. We are now costing, so if we had to do it in the existing Bayeta plant, what would the outcome be? But as we know, and as we have said before, a ton of underground ore is worth much more than a ton of tailings ore. So we've had to change our focus to have a look at on the ground, if we had to perhaps do a standalone processing facility, what those numbers would actually be like. So it'll be done in due course, but we are exploring every avenue to see what we can do with it.
Excellent. And the overall sort of update in production came alongside some major developments and expansion works. Can you tell me how this was achieved and how it will benefit you in the future?
Well, the benefit in Zimbabwe with the expansion will be, as I've said earlier, the increased tonnage and the increased grade that we will get from the sulfide areas of the ore body. The oxide's been running at between 2 and 2.5 grams a ton. The sulfides will run at between 3 and 4 grams a ton. And we will be milling an extra 15,000 tons a month. So that will be a substantial increase in production in Zimbabwe. In Romania, we have now got the mine plan in place, the computer-generated plan, as Craig referred to. We've got this drilling machine that's coming in to do the blast hole testing and ore grade verification, so that we will be able to define more accurately the higher grade areas and define more explicitly the areas to be mined and to secure the correct grade going to the plant. So the mining side has been upgraded substantially. On the processing, we have two mills at Jacobin, and what we are doing is optimizing the first mill, the newer one, to produce or to process at least 15,000 tons a month. And this optimization program is now drawing to a close, and we believe we're very close to achieving that tonnage. And then in the flotation part of the plant, we've been able to separate the zinc out of the copper concentrate and remove the penalty for the zinc being in the copper concentrate. And in doing that, we've been able to maintain the copper concentrate at about 18% copper, which is the optimal level of copper in each ton of concentrate. And we've started a second process whereby we produce a zinc concentrate. And having done that, the effort has been to get the zinc concentrate up to 45% zinc concentrate, because that is the magical number for zinc. And we're very close to that percentage now. So we've got two good concentrates being produced at the moment. And the third area is to recover the free gold and silver that's not reporting in either the copper or the zinc concentrate that's remaining in the tailings. We're extracting that gold through a Knelson concentrator, and that will provide us with a third income stream at Maniela, and obviously that will add to the bottom line. So these are the things that we've been working on in order to get the productivity of both mines improved and increased.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And moving forward a bit, talking about Romania really, but how confident are you of progress being made regarding the license for BP, and also more generally about future results over the next, say, 6 to 12 months and 12 to 18 months?
I'm going to ask Andrew to comment on the Baeta license in a moment. I'm confident that it's going to come through, but he's the man on the ground, and it's his responsibility, and he's been steering this for the last 18 months. Mm-hmm. But going to the next 6 to 9 months and 18 months, what our objectives are is to make sure that we produce or process 15,000 tons of ore at Maniela through the existing metallurgical complex at Jacobin, and start work and design work on the metallurgical complex that will be going in at the mine at Maniela to get rid of the transport costs, and to maintain a 18% copper concentrate, 45% zinc concentrate, and the gold concentrate. But of course, the big push now is going to be the Baeta mine. It's equipped and it's ready to go. There is some refurbishment work that we have to do there, but we are really looking forward to the issuance of that license, which will give us the go-ahead to reopen that mine and to get the mine into its first phase production level of about 10,000 tons a month. And that, being a very much higher grade mine than Maniela, will produce good quality concentrate in copper and zinc and others. And we know that once achieved, that will be a really good cash cow, as it were, for the company. But in terms of the license, Andrew, do you want to just give some more information?
Certainly. As you know, we've been struggling to obtain this association on the license for some time now. We've managed to overcome most of the hurdles and to find a path forward, which we announced back in August. We've now achieved all the goals. We've maintained all the timelines as agreed with the state company by its SA, and we're now at the final stages of finalising the association agreement, and we believe that we will have it all completed as previously announced and hopefully be operational, or at least on site and working by Christmas. We have had, let's say, very, very positive discussions, very very productive discussions with Bayes SA on how to work together within the perimeter. And we believe that there is nothing holding us back now. It's only a matter of time and due process.
Excellent stuff. Okay, thanks, guys. Well, that's quite the questions there. Just one final thing, Roy. If someone's listening right now and they like the sound of the progress they're making there at Vast but are not yet following you on Vox Markets, could you give them three brief reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please?
Yeah. Justin, I think the first one is that this company has made the successful transition from being an exploration capital consumption type company into a junior production company, whereby we will be providing sufficient income for the company to sustain itself and to fund its expansion program. So it's a junior producer that is blessed with a huge amount of opportunity in the two jurisdictions that it operates in. The second reason to consider this company as an investment destination is the fact that it operates in Romania and Zimbabwe, and these two countries are not on the top of investors' lists at the moment. They are considered to be challenging countries to work in. But because of our unique position, I'm a Zimbabwean, I understand what is happening in the country, I can read between the lines, and we have a very good working relationship with the state, and we are able to operate there because we are Zimbabweans. And it would be very much more difficult for foreigners to come in there and to understand the ways and means of the mining industry in that country. So it's unique. There are not a lot of people competing for the gold assets in Zimbabwe, and these gold assets at the moment are very competitively priced because of the situation in the country, and we can take advantage of that. The same thing applies in Romania. Romania has an incredible amount of mineral resources. Because of Andrew and his team there, we are able to get on with developing things in Romania despite the challenges that other foreign companies would face in Romania. So I think the third thing is that we got first mover status in both Romania and Zimbabwe, in countries that are going to become more influential in the minerals sector. And we are on the ground. We are working away, establishing our position ahead of the competition, so that when the competition arrives, and we know it will arrive, we will be well placed. We will have secured the assets we want. We will have operations already underway. We will be cash positive in both jurisdictions, and we'll be extremely well placed to take advantage of the forthcoming uptick in both the Zimbabwe and the Romanian economy. And already Romania is one of the best performing economies in Europe, and when the new progressive mining laws are implemented, the mining sector is going to have a bigger impact on the Romanian economy than it perhaps is at the moment.
Excellent, guys. It's good to chat to you, and you've got a lot going on. So no doubt we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Dan Gooding, CEO of Nuformix. That's NFX ticker, which is a reverse takeover of Leverett. Dan, thanks for joining me.
My pleasure, Justin.
Now, you're floating today. It's an exciting day for you, but obviously people may not have heard of you. So give us a brief summary, Dan. What's Nuformix all about?
Nuformix is effectively a products from technology model, taking new products into the pharmaceutical industry. We have specialized in a field called co-crystal technology since the company's inception. And it's co-crystal-based products that we're now looking to develop using the proceeds from the placing.
Okay, all right. And so how would you sort of define Nuformix in a world of many in the quoted biotech market, Dan?
What sets Nuformix apart is how we're able to use co-crystal technology to provide pieces that are not usually in place for companies that are developing innovative products based on new drugs. So typically, companies looking to reprofile a drug into a new use or reformulate a product into an improved use typically lack any real substance of matter, intellectual property protection, or any significant what we would term biodifferentiation. How do we make our product uniquely different, or how do we uniquely label it to do something novel? And that's what we use co-crystal technology for. That underpins everything that we do in a product sense. We have a portfolio of granted patents now, and it's products from that portfolio that we're developing in our lead programs.
Okay, and what are your objectives for the business then?
Our objectives from the business are twofold. Firstly, to hit what we believe are highly deliverable short-term objectives in terms of our clinical programs. We are conducting human pharmacokinetic studies as opposed to more complex human efficacy studies. In terms of a pharmacokinetic study, we're simply looking at our ability to uniquely modify the way in which our drugs can be delivered. Having demonstrated that, because of certain circumstances around our two lead programs, we're then able to conduct licensing events in the near term for our first program, NXP1, which is going into the supportive care on oncology space, which is something like currently a £20 billion market. Our second product is something where we're actually looking to change the pharmaceutical use of a drug, an allergy therapy, and take it into the area of fibrosis, which is currently an area of great unmet need and commercial opportunity. So that's a slightly longer term event, but we have an opportunity to fund future development of that second asset from revenues from out-licensing from our first asset. And we currently have negotiations for out-licensing from that first asset already underway.
Okay, and is it possible to say where your current value is and the future value of the business?
Yes, it is. I mean, one can take a view on you know, our current valuation, which our market cap is around 18 million. I think the real midterm value is about our ability to deliver something innovative in the fibrosis space. And one can look at the plethora of deals that have been completed recently by pharma companies that are very hungry to get into that space. If one simply considers liver fibrosis, which is an incredibly fascinating market, that value of that market is currently around £1 billion at the moment. It's forecast to increase to around 20 billion by 2026. So that's a growth rate of about 45% annually. So when you see companies looking to get into an emerging market like that, you can see the kind of deals that they're looking to complete even at an early stage. Therefore, in terms of valuations, one can look at the kind of upfront figures that companies are getting for those kind of early stage assets, which may represent as much as a 5x uplift in our current market cap.
Okay, Dan, so if people do hit the follow button on your page on Vox Markets, what's the next milestone, next bit of news they can expect from you?
Okay, so the key piece of news I think we'll be ready to announce soon is a first licensing event for our first asset, NXP1. That will be soon followed up by announcements of collaborations with other pharma companies where they're keen to work with us in developing new co-crystal forms of drugs to take forward into new uses. From there, we'll be looking at soon after around a six-month time frame being able to announce some really interesting preclinical results for NXP2 in fibrosis, further validation of the activity of the drug towards preventing fibrosis. And then I would have thought that lastly, within the kind of 12-month period, we'll be looking at announcement of data, human PK data for our first program, NXP1. So that should give you a rough feel for the kind of things that we're looking at over the first 12 months in terms of major events.
Excellent. Okay, Darwin, if someone's listening right now, and obviously they're not following you because you're brand new to the market, and but they like the sound of what you're talking about and the timeline of events happening, give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page, please.
Okay, the first reason would be the patents, the granted patents that we currently have, and the differentiation that we've already demonstrated in the drug for NXP and NXP1 and 2. The second reason would be the risk profile of those assets. It's a reduced risk profile based on the safety data and the other data that we have around the asset in terms of how that de-risks future development. The third reason would be the optionality in our pipeline. We have numerous options in terms of out-licensing both NXP1 and NXP2, and those two assets are supported by early-stage programs such as NXP3 and the ongoing co-crystal discovery and development work which we are conducting to add to our pipeline.
Marvellous, Dan, good to chat to you, and it seems like you've got a busy, you know, 3, 6, 12 months ahead of you, so no doubt we'll speak again in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, market analyst at Spreadex. You all right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
Now, just to bring people up to speed, you look at companies that are releasing updates, trading updates or full results or interims in the next few days. So who are we going with first, Connor?
ASOS, you know, or on Tuesday, always a popular stock.
Most successful, isn't it? Most successful AIM company ever. And I think I saw some kind of stat, like if you invested $1,000, you would get $166,000 back at the, from trough to peak. Yeah, something ridiculous. So
No, it's trading around the £60 mark, which... Mm. You know, for a retailer in 2017 is incredible, really. And like you said, for an AIM stock as well, it's astonishing. However, it has sort of been trading very laterally in the last couple of months. It's sort of struggled. It's bouncing around, you know, keeps sort of hitting near that £60 mark and not really being able to push beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's sort of a case of it becoming a... not a victim, but sort of a victim of its own success, really. You know, it posts these amazing sort of growth, amazing growth every quarter. Mm-hmm. And I think investors, you know, you get slightly immune to 30% sales growth and stuff like that. And it takes a bit more to impress investors. And, you know, £60 is a lot. It's a lot for a stock.
Yeah.
In the retail sector, in mainly in the UK. But, you know, looking at the figures... You know, it's hard to argue really with ASOS's figures. Half your figures in April, 14% rise in pre-tax profit, 37% jump in sales, with even more impressively a 54% increase in international sales. It's really, really doing well in Europe and in the US, obviously, which, you know, so much room to expand in there. However, investors, they were a bit concerned with the contraction in the company's retail gross margins across the first half of the year. And again, I think, you know, that's going to be an issue, again, in the retail sector as a whole, rising input costs and things like that. In June, we'll see with the other stocks that I'm going to talk about in a minute. June was a horrible, horrible month for the retail sector as a whole. You know, falling real wages, the shock of the election, rising inflation, sort of just fears of a economic downturn in general really caused a lot of retail stocks to suffer during that month. ASOS's fall was sort of exacerbated towards the end of the month by Amazon announcing Prime Wardrobe, which mm-hmm. is like a subscription-based box service where customers only pay for what they decide to keep. I think investors were sort of fretting that when that is launched later in the year, that sort of Amazon musting in on ASOS's sort of turf, really. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen so many different stocks and sectors this year, Amazon doing just that, you know, musting in on their turf, and investors getting very worried about it, even though there hasn't necessarily been, you know, there's, you know, Prime Wardrobe hasn't launched yet, with Ocado, Amazon's supermarket food offerings aren't anything really in the UK for them to worry about just yet. But it shows the clout of Amazon, that the slightest signs that they might be moving into your sector or into your specific sort of area of expertise is a major concern for investors. Q3 figures then in July. Again, very, very strong. 35% rise in revenue, 3% increase in the value of the average basket, 28% increase in total orders shipped. Yet, investors sort of didn't really, pay much attention to it. It didn't cause this sort of explosive market growth that, you'd kind of expect from those sorts of figures. And again, it's like I said, I think investors are getting used to those figures from ASOS and now perhaps starting to question, okay, well, when is this going to start to slow down soon? Like, how long can the company maintain that kind of 30% sales growth each quarter? And recently it launched same-day delivery in London, which I guess it's attempt at trying to sort of muscle in on Amazon's own turf. You've seen Tesco do the same thing as well. I think investors this next week will want some kind of update on that. In terms of pre-tax profit, full-year pre-tax profit is expected to rise around 22.5%. I think sales growth is expected to be up again 30 to 35%, hitting exactly those kind of marks it's done all year. But it's going to be interesting to see if investors are willing, to send it any higher than that £60 mark. Despite those figures, our clients have been looking at what they've been doing in the last month or so. They've been selling ASOS around that £60 mark. I think even if it does post some spectacular full year figures, it might not see the growth that those numbers would perhaps have warranted in the past.
Yeah, well, the thing is, the longer they stayed there, and they are still quite rich. I mean, I'm trying to find out their pre-tax profit here, but the longer they stay there, the more competition comes in, doesn't it? And profit before tax, so this is for the interims, 6 months to the 28th of June, is 27.3 million. And so if you double that, they are still a very rich company. They're a 5 billion company, so the PE is around about 78 or to 100, so the price owner is still a very rich company, expensive company to buy, really. And when you think all the time there's all kinds of competitions coming in, especially with like some Amazon, how long can they keep doing it for, like you say? And I was just looking at now, they floated. When they floated back when they started, 24 pence they were. That's just 245 times that multiple you'd have got. If you put a grand in, obviously you get £245,000 by now. So it's not a bad punt. Bad punt. <No. laughs> But I can't see anyone of holding on to that. If you've gone for 24 pence, even the even a 10 bag at £2.40, you're probably most people have cashed out by then. This has done well, but it kept going. It's phenomenal. That's ASOS, but yeah. I can't see it doing. It's just so much competition, isn't it? Anyway, what's next, Connor?
We've got Reckitt Benckiser on Wednesday.
Yeah.
And they've had quite the year, really. Things were going really well for them. First five and a bit months of the year. Climbed really sharply. Again, sort of the trend we've seen in the entire UK retail sector, a fairly decent first 5 months of the year, and then June hit and things just started to go wrong. The company's sort of Reckitt's year has been mainly the first half focus was on its acquisition of Mead Johnson, which is like an infant formula company. I think they bought it for $18 billion, which is a lot of money. Yeah. But I think it has like 14% of the baby food market, 50% of its sales are in Asia. So, that's a huge market for Reckitt to tap into. It sold its food division to McCormick for, I think, like $4.2 billion in order to, reduce some of the debt incurred by that Mead Johnson purchase. However, June, retail sector woes, blah, blah, blah. In July, more specifically, there was the NotPetya cyber attack.
Yes.
I think Reckitt said that was going to cost the company $100 million in revenue due to delays to deliveries and production and things like that. And in July, in its half-year figures, it announced it was cutting its full-year revenue growth target from 3% to 2% due to that cyber attack. And on top of that, had to set aside $318 million to cover the potential cost of a US investigation into Indivior, which was the pharmaceutical company they spun off in 2014. I think the investigations in relation to Indivior, or then, you know, Reckitt, blocking generic drugs from making it to market.
Yeah, I think
And
so.
They also wanted that.
Indivior. I mean, I want to be a bit of French from you, Connor. Indivior.
Yeah, and that 318 million, which is, you know, a sizable chunk of change. Mm-hmm. The company also warned that that could be materially higher if, you know, if the US investigation goes the wrong way for them. On top of that, you know, sort of the bitter cherry on top of that half year report in July was that interim like-for-like sales had dropped 1%. So it was really, really, really awful half-year report in July, and it hasn't really recovered since. In mid-September, it took another knock because its main shareholder, JAB or JAB Holdings, cut its stake in the company from 8.9% to 7.9%. Again, so that pushed it lower. It's sort of in the last week or so, last 2 weeks, it's climbed quite sharply, but it's nowhere near where it was back at the start of June.
Yeah,
it really needs to, in terms of its third quarter results on Wednesday, it really needs to see a turnaround in its like-for-like performance at the very least. And I guess the avoidance of any more nasty surprises like that sort of US investigation fine and things like that, as well as an update on the integration of Mead Johnson and what exactly their plans are for that company going forwards, and how they see that company working within its wider portfolio. I think first and foremost, just avoid any more shocks.
Yeah. I mean, the rally there has been a bit too, sharp in my mind. They need to retest that low it had recently. But amazing amount of brands they've got, from like Dettol, Durex, Harpic, Airwick, Nurofen, Scholl, Veet, Clearasil, Gaviscon. It goes on. Amazing. So that's, they are a bit $50 billion, pound company. Okay, and so that's Reckitt Benckiser. What else, Connor? Who else has reported?
Yeah, finally we've got Travis Perkins on Thursday.
Yeah.
Again, sort of chart not dissimilar from Reckitt's, really. You know, strong start to the year, gets into a bit of trouble in May, but sort of comes through at the end of the month, and then June onwards, really, really struggled. It's figures haven't been that bad. Full year figures in March, it did see a 60% drop in pre-tax profit, which is pretty ugly, but a 2.7% rise in like-for-likes. You know, it saw quite a sharp plunge after those full year figures in March, but bounced back quite quickly. First quarter figures in April again maintained a 2.7% rise in like-for-like sales, even though it put its prices up by 2.6%, which, you know, that's not bad. Again, miserable June, mainly due to the wider retail sector issues that we've spoken about in the last two stocks. Half year figures in August, revenue was up 3.5% to 3.2 billion, but then pre-tax profit fell 4.5 billion due to things like rising input costs, which I guess is only going to be, that problem's only going to persist in the second half of the year. And the CEO, John Carter, didn't sound particularly positive during that half-year report. I think he said that with DIY, you're competing against things like holidays and sofas and new cars, and that at the moment, with low consumer confidence and, you know, sort of fears around the UK economy, people are opting to go on holiday rather than, you know, home improvement and things like that, which is, you know, it's a fair enough point, but one that doesn't sound particularly great coming from your CEO.
No.
But like I said, despite its sort of fairly rollercoaster market performance, its like-for-like sales performance has been incredibly consistent, like hitting that 2.7% growth for the last few quarters, you know, maintaining it in the half year, maintaining it in the full year, 2016. So if it can post similar figures again, or obviously ideally better than, but even if it can just post that 2.7% like-for-like growth with its third quarter figures, I think there's room for it to grow. We've seen our clients buying at its current levels, and I think that's due to its managing to be consistent. And in the current retail sector climate, that kind of consistency, I guess, counts for more than it perhaps would have in the past.
Well, do you know what? Out of the three stocks, I think your clients are the smartest here if they are picking up this stock here, because £14 or around that level is a major support, and it's fallen heavily from, like, what, a couple of years ago it was at 22 quid, now it's £14, around about 14.78. So that level is showing a lot of, it keeps bouncing off that level. So I would suggest, unless they have some really dire results, it won't go below that, you know. So, so your clients are very smart cookies, Connor, and they're looking at the right story, in my mind, out of the three we've mentioned today anyway. Excellent stuff. Good to chat to you. Speak next week, Connor.
Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Market in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Angus Energy, ANGS, a big RNS out last Friday. At four, Ascent Resources, AST, always there. At three, it's a new entry, Altona Energy, ANR. I think it's up by 50-odd% today. At two, I spoke to Dr. Dan Gooden earlier, New Formix, that's NFX. And number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours was Rehbold Resources, RBD. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Greatland Gold, that's Ernest Giles East, new license application. At four, Metal Tiger, investment update. At three, Strategic Minerals, SML, term sheet for acquisition of copper oxide project. At two, Blenheim Natural Resources, BNR, 15 lithium target areas identified in Mali. That's identified in Mali, by the way. And at one, the most liked RNS was from Highland Natural Resources, completion of hydraulic fracturing at East Denver's fracturing. I'm having problems with my new teeth this morning. completion of hydraulic fracturing in East Denver. That should have sounded like. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.